500 years ago, a French essayist wrote these words. He said, "My life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened." More recently, some of our best researchers at Cornell University did a lengthy study with a whole lot of people, and they discovered that 85% of the things that we worry about never happen. 85%. Think about the things you worried about this week. 85% of those things will never happen. And I know we read that, and some of you are looking at that number and you're feeling a little relieved, like, great, 85% of the things I worry about won't happen. And then others of you who are more skilled at worrying are looking at that and saying, wait a minute, that means 15% of the things I worry about are going to happen. So here's what they discovered. Of the 15% that did happen, 79% of the people they studied discovered that it wasn't as bad as what they thought it was going to be. Or they said that they learned something really valuable from going through the experience. And someone did the math on this and concluded that it means that 97% of the things we worry about, 97% of our worrying is completely baseless because it's just not going to happen or it's not going to be that bad. And so 90% of our worrying is nothing more than our fear torturing us. And 100% of worrying does 0% to change anything, right? Another, a stress expert talking about this said, you know, that quote from that French essayist makes people laugh, but he says, listen, a worried mind means a chronically stressed brain, and chronic stress generates serious problems. The hormones that stress and worry dump into your system, here's what they do. They shrink brain mass. They lower your IQ. They make you prone to heart disease and cancer and premature aging. They predict marital problems, family dysfunction and depression, and they make seniors more likely to develop dementia and Alzheimer's. And then he said this, if we could get a handle on the worry and stress that habitually, incessantly, and often unconsciously seizes hold of our mind, we would greatly increase the odds of living longer, happier, healthier, and more successful life. So how do we combat worry? You can try to stop worrying by denying the realities of pain and trouble. The younger we are, the better we are at this. We don't realize anything bad could ever happen to us. We don't think anything bad. So you can go that way. You can just try to ignore that anything bad could ever happen in life. But as you get older, you realize it will. Or you can take a stoic view about everything that happens and just say, well, it's just what's going to happen. And try and shut your emotions down from it. But when I want to learn about how to deal with worry, I turn to Jesus. Think about Jesus' life. He had no place to lay his head, no home. People were constantly pressing him to do things for him. Jesus, heal my this. Jesus, heal my kids. Jesus, so-and-so is dead. Can you raise him to life again? Jesus, can you feed us? Thousands of people. Jesus, will you feed us? We're hungry. Pressured and challenged at every turn by the leaders in his community, the religious leaders, even the national leaders pressuring him, coming after him. His disciples, his own best friends, being so thick-headed that they couldn't understand what he was saying a large portion of the time and missing the point, knowing that he was headed toward a horrific end to his life on this earth where he would alone take on the weight of humanity's sin. Just think about all those things Jesus legitimately had to worry about or could have worried about, and yet he lived without worry or fear. You think maybe, just maybe, we could learn something about overcoming worry from Jesus? So last week we said we were going to be looking at and focusing on three kinds of worry, or three different flavors of worry, right? We said there's the future worry, worry about our eternity, and we talked about that last week. And we said there's also my worry about my tomorrow, the immediate future, and tomorrow and beyond. And then there's worry about our present day, what's happening right now. And today I want to read you an encounter that Jesus had with someone who wanted Jesus to help him with something he was worried about. And let's see what kind of flavor we're dealing with today, what kind of flavor of worry. So this is in Luke chapter 12. We're going to start in verse 13. There's crowds of people gathered around Jesus. They're pressing in on him. And this is what happens. Someone in the crowd yells out, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And Jesus replies, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" And then he said to all of them, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And then he told them this parable. He said, the ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, what should I do? I have no place to store my crops. There's too many. And then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, I'll build bigger ones. And there I'll store my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many, many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. So what kind of worry did that young guy have complaining, help him tell my brother to give me my part of the inheritance? He was worrying about his tomorrows, his future. He was worrying about what was gonna come, because if he doesn't get his inheritance, he has no land, he has nothing to work, he has no job, no income. He needs that inheritance to secure his tomorrows. So he's got what he needs going down the road. If he doesn't get that, he's worried about what might happen. He can only imagine, and he's worrying. But how does Jesus' parable answer that worry that this guy expresses and asks for help with? What kind of answer is this? Because Jesus essentially answers him by saying, watch out for the kind of greed that worry causes. Watch out for the kind of greed that worry causes. Let's look at it more closely. This rich man in the parable, he owns a farm. And one year that farm produces more than it had ever produced before, more than he could even imagine. It's a bumper crop, we'd call it today. Enough to set him up for life. And he's like, well, what do I do with all this stuff? And if you and I are going to connect with what Jesus is saying in this parable here, here's what I need you to do. I want you to imagine that something happens tomorrow where you inherit or win or find and discover, not steal, enough money to set you up for life. Just imagine that right now. Imagine something happens that sets you up for life. I can tell by your smiles, most of you are imagining it pretty well. This man then does what most people would do if they suddenly struck it rich. He secures his wealth and decides to enjoy his life. He says, I'm set for life. I'm going to retire. I'm going to relax, enjoy my life, and just do what I want to do. The rest of my life, I'm going to enjoy it. And the people Jesus was talking to, these are almost every one of them poor people who maybe had a couple sets of clothing and lived day to day. Every one of them who heard Jesus tell this parable would have thought, man, if only that was me. If only that was me, that I could just suddenly tomorrow have enough that I am set for life. Oh, I would enjoy that so much. Imagine how much I could relax. Even you and I today. Even though, if you think about it and compare ourselves to all the people who've ever walked the planet, we would be among the richest people who ever walked the planet. Regardless of how much money you sitting here today have, all of us would fall into the category of some of the richest people who've ever walked the planet. And even you and I still today think, boy, if I could just have enough to secure my life and that I don't have to go to that job and work with that coworker, do what that boss says, I don't have to put up with that grind anymore, I could just do what I wanna do. We want that as well. And as we're sitting here daydreaming about what would happen if you struck it rich tomorrow and we end up in this man's shoes, God talks and says something disturbing and shocking. He says, you fool, this very day, your life will be demanded from you. Then who's going to get all the stuff that you stored up? I said, wait a minute, did God just call the guy I'm envying a fool? What is God seeing that I'm not seeing in this man? Well, let's go through Jesus' story again. Only this time I've highlighted some of the words to help us maybe pick up on what God is seeing. First of all, he says, the ground of a certain man, rich man, yielded abundant crops. He didn't do anything. The ground yielded the crops. He didn't make that. The ground, Jesus points to, the ground yields the crop. And then he thought to himself. He didn't talk to God, didn't talk to family or anybody else. He said, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And then he said, not to anybody else, just to himself, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus of grain, and I'll say to myself, self, you've got all you need for the rest of your life. Take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Did you catch it that time? This is why Jesus said to watch out for all different kinds of greed, in particular, in this case, the kind of greed that arises from worrying about our tomorrows and trying to secure them. Because greedy people see everything that comes their way as theirs. There were even rules that should have been followed. God gave rules to farmers and said, you don't plow, you don't harvest all the way to the edges of your fields. You leave a margin unharvested so that those who are in need can come and get food. This guy scoops it all up for himself. This is what greedy people do, because if I scoop it all up for myself, I'm going to secure my tomorrow. Greedy people forget that God is the one who allows them to have anything that they have. We end up selfishly hoarding what God allows us to have in order to secure our tomorrows. And we never ask God, what do you want me to do with what you've given me here? You often foolishly assume, oh, this is about me securing my tomorrows, and that's going to set you and me free from worry, but it's not, and it won't, and we're fools for thinking it will. And then Jesus summarizes and hints at an answer for you and me, a real answer to our worries about tomorrow. He says, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. And then Jesus is going to now turn to his disciples and teach them what he means. He's going to turn to them and he's going to teach them how to stop worrying about tomorrow. So this is what he tells them. Verse 22, it says, then Jesus said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They don't sow and they don't reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? And since you can't do that very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They don't labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God loves the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. For the unbelieving world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. So what are the lessons Jesus teaches us about worry? Well, first, Jesus demonstrates that he understood 2,000 years ago what some of our best researchers just established. Worrying is anti-productive. Worrying doesn't change anything. It doesn't do anything to change our circumstances. So worrying serves no productive purpose. But that's not enough. I mean, that just makes me feel bad about the times I worry. Knowing that worrying doesn't do anything, now I'm worried about how much I worry. Right? So we need a solution. We need something to aim at instead. And this is what Jesus gives us. And this is really important. Jesus says there are more important things than food or clothing. When's the last time you worried about food? I don't mean about what you were going to have for dinner, because you may not like it as much as your favorite thing. I mean, when's the last time you genuinely were worried that you weren't going to have enough food and you were going to starve to death? Have any of us ever felt that? When's the last time you worried about clothes? I don't mean finding the pair of clothes that still fit you. I don't mean finding the pair of clothes that make you look the best. I mean just worried about, oh no, I'm gonna have to go to work naked today. Not because you forgot to do laundry, but because you have no clothes. When's the last time you worried about that? We don't. We have much smaller things to worry about, even than what Jesus is talking about. But Jesus is saying, imagine yourself in this place and imagine not worrying about even what you're going to eat and your clothes, in spite of how valuable they are and important they are. Are you still with Jesus on this? He's saying, don't even worry about that. He doesn't say food and clothing aren't important. They are. But he's saying there's something more important. And if we're ever going to break the cycle of worrying, we need to hear what Jesus says here. There's something more important even than your life, even than having clothes to wear, even than having food to eat. There's something more than. Life is more than, Jesus says. And what Jesus is trying to do is to get us to a more than life when we're stuck in an equal to frame of mind. We're stuck thinking that life is equal to the stuff I have. My life is the things I have, the things that make me secure. How much do I have in savings? How much am I got toward retirement? What's my house like? What's my car like? How much clothing do I have? We're stuck in an equal to kind of mindset where life is, and it's almost unavoidable to, and it's hard to escape. Life is equal to the stuff I've got. This is what I have. And we go around trying to accumulate more. And the more I have, the better I feel about how secure I am. Like, yeah, I've got plenty in the bank. I'm secure now. I can relax. Right? Life is equal to the stuff. And Jesus is trying to teach us, no, life is more than. I want you to take on a more than. Because when we think life is equal to these things we amass and possess and get, so great, I got out of debt. Now I'm building up my savings. And boy, I'm feeling so much. My worry and my stress is going down because I've got this nest egg built up. And Jesus is saying, that actually isn't going to set you free from worry. Because the equal to life, like life equals the stuff I have, that is a life that's going to be plagued with worry because now you've got to worry about what if I lose it? If your life equals the stuff you've managed to pile up that makes you feel like you've got a good buffer around yourself, what happens when you lose one of those things? What happens when your car gets totaled and you can't afford to buy a new one? What happens when the market goes nuts and you wipes out half of the value of your savings and investments? How do you feel? People go into crisis. Look around you today, everybody in crisis, going through existential crisis because they've lost some chunk of what was giving them security. And that to them, because they were living an equal to life, it means that they've lost part of life. And Jesus is saying, no, I'm teaching you here a more than life. He says, verse 31, seek God's kingdom and these things will be given to you as well. Pour your resources, your time, your energy, your money, your intellect, your emotion, all of it, invest it into God's kingdom and trust God to provide for the things you need, not everything you want, but the things you and I need. By holding on to things selfishly and treating them greedily like they're for me and my security, you and I miss out on this more than life that Jesus is trying to encourage us toward and simultaneously doom ourselves to a life of worry. Because once you've accumulated stuff, now you're worried about holding on to it because that equals life in our minds. And Jesus is saying, no, I want you to see life as more than those things. The antidote to worrying about tomorrow is to invest everything we have into God's kingdom. And what does that look like? What does that mean? Seek God's kingdom first. Invest in God's kingdom first. Well, Jesus goes on. He says, verse 32, don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. So sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you pour your treasure into yourself, into things that can easily be wiped away, but into you, guess where your heart's going to be? You're only going to be loving yourself. If we pour our treasure into God's kingdom, which is made up of people, then your heart will be with God and with others. Every investment that helps bring God's kingdom of love and life to bear in this world will turn you into a more loving person. Your heart will be where God's heart is. This is what Jesus is trying to encourage us toward. And everyone gets rattled when Jesus says things like, so sell your possessions and give to the poor. Because we think, oh no, but if I do that, then I'll have nothing and then life will be miserable. Jesus is not trying to aim us toward a miserable life of nothingness. He's aiming us toward a more than life, a life that's truly full. Because you could amass a fortune, you could build it up and you could make your own banks even and store it all up and hold it. And then an earthquake can come and hit and tomorrow it's all gone. Or you could also build up a giant nest egg, have everything you need, and then suddenly you drop dead tomorrow, and then where does it go? It didn't make you secure, did it? Or you and I can use what God allows us to have. We can invest it in the more than life that builds loving, caring relationships among people. People who are more important than things. Invest in bringing others into relationship with God through Jesus. Let the world see the peace you have in Jesus through the way you treat possessions and how unshakable that peace is compared to the peace they've tried to buy with the stuff that they've amassed. That's Jesus' solution to worrying about tomorrow. When you let God set you free from the life equals the stuff I accumulate mentality and give you a life is more than these things mentality, it sets you and I free from worrying about our tomorrows. And look, is that easy? No. I know personally that's not easy. I get what Jesus is saying. I struggle to practice it though. Don't you? Jesus knew this wasn't easy. And that's why I think in verse 32, he throws in this very quick and sudden little picture that can maybe make it a little easier for us to swallow this pill of what he's saying to us about the way we should look at everything we have. That'll actually set us free from worry. He says in verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock. Just that quick little thing, little flock. It just creates a word picture, doesn't it? What's the picture? We're the sheep. Have you ever been around sheep? They are chickens. I know that sounds counterintuitive. They are scared, timid. Sheep are always nervous. And look, applying what Jesus says here might scare you. On the one hand, you're scared about, I need my tomorrow to be secure, so I'm gonna grab all this stuff, but that doesn't really make you secure. You're still worrying about it all the time. But then Jesus says, no, the idea is don't invest everything into getting all that stuff that's not gonna actually make you secure. Invest in God's kingdom and building God's kingdom through loving relationships and pouring your resources into doing things God would do. And now that starts to make us nervous too. Because now that means you and I are going to have a talk with God about the difference between being wise with our finances and planning. Take your retirement, for instance. What's the difference? Where's the line between being wise and planning versus being greedy and hoarding? You and I are going to have to talk to God about that when we walk away from here this morning. Where's that line, Jesus? Where's that line between looking at how I spend my money right now, where's the line between me being selfish and greedy and me just taking care of my family? Where's that line? You're gonna have to ask Jesus to show you where you're in danger of having worry about tomorrow turn you into a greedy person. And I'm gonna have to talk to Jesus and Christina too about how does worrying about tomorrow turn me into a greedy person? Because it's amazing, and people have joked about it all the time. And $20 in my hand when I'm in the mall or on Amazon looks way smaller than it does when there's someone in need who needs 20 bucks, or I'm in church. All of a sudden, that 20 bucks looks huge. I'm like, oh, that's a lot to give, where I'll throw 20 bucks at Amazon like that. I mean, Amazon needs the money, so it's nice. Why is that? Why does my desire for things that are gonna make me feel secure because I'm worried about my tomorrows, why does it turn you and me into greedy people? We gotta talk to him about that. And if that doesn't scare you a little bit and shake you up a little bit, then you're probably not completely understanding what Jesus is saying. It should challenge every one of us about the way we handle not just our money, but everything we have, my time, my energy, my affections, all of it. But I want you to remember too at the same time how this picture, when he says little flock, how that can give you and me real comfort as we face this challenge in front of us. I want you to remember how, I don't know how many of you have ever been around shepherds today. Mostly you would picture today, you drive the sheep where you want them to go. Back then, the way they did it was different. They led the sheep. The shepherd went ahead of the sheep and the sheep followed. They walked in front of them. And what Jesus is calling them the picture, and what Jesus is doing in that very moment as he said this, is he is leading the way by doing the very thing he's telling them and us to do. The good shepherd leads the way. Remember all that Jesus gave up in order to come and save you and me. Remember how Jesus is God and gave up all his privileges as God to become like you and me. And not just like you and me, but to suffer and die in the worst possible way at our hands. Consider all that Jesus gave up as he emptied himself of everything and walked through the valley of the shadow of death, leading the way for you and me to follow and find God's pastures and still waters. Jesus invested his entire self in the kingdom of God. All he had, he laid his life down in love for us. He doesn't call us to walk a path he didn't himself walk. And following Jesus as our shepherd means laying our lives down as he did, emptying ourselves as he did, investing ourselves as he did. But remember, this isn't because Jesus wants to lead you and me into a life of misery and emptiness. It's because the path of emptying is the path toward absolute and complete fullness. It's the path toward absolute peace in God. It's the path to more than this world could ever offer. That's why Jesus says, "Don't be afraid, little flock. I'm leading the way. Your Father has been pleased already to give you his kingdom. We already have in Jesus all we ever need." And that should set us free from worry in a way nothing ever could. Nothing in this world ever could set us free from worry the way Jesus sets us free from worry. Because Jesus faces the reality of trouble in this life, but points us past it to what he's done. You know, Jesus' words here remind me of Psalm 23. I'm gonna ask Craig to come back. He's gonna sing a song here that I wanna close with. But as he comes, we're gonna start by reading Psalm 23. We're going to start to end by reading Psalm 23. Psalm 23 is perhaps the ultimate anti-worry prayer song. In this psalm, we realize the kind of Father we have, who is working to lead us into green pastures, who is working to lead us through the valley of the shadow of death, along the paths where he has for us, and bring us to the place where even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even though we're surrounded by enemies, the psalm says, God sits us down to eat. You and I aren't out of danger. There's still things that are gonna happen. There's still gonna be troubles. At least the 15% of things that are still gonna happen, and at least the 3% of things that are really actually going to be bad, but guess what? Even if they kill us, we're following Jesus through that into this new life that God has prepared for us. And that's what this psalm calls us to. So we're gonna read it together. Craig's gonna lead us in reading it, and then we're gonna sing this song. And as we do, I just want you to reflect on the things you worry about. And I want you to begin to give them to God. If you wanna come and gather around this altar while we're singing the song, please don't hesitate. This is a great place to come, and our deacons will come and pray with you, and your friends will come and pray with you. Maybe bring your friends with you and just begin to give your worries over to God and say, Jesus, help me to pursue this more than life and let go of this equal to life. Help me to find this real freedom from worry in you. Craig, just lead us in reading that psalm.
Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing.
Let's read it all together.
He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake, even though I walk through the darkest valley. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.